The next agenda item, again, is our quarterly, this is our quarterly investment portfolio report provided by Merrill Lynch / BlackRock, and Jeff Hewlett and Paul Harvey are here to discuss that, to discuss the document that's in, again, in your notebook. Oh, come on.
Mr. Director, board members, we'll be looking at the Black Portfolio book. If I could ask you to turn to page 15. And this morning's update covers June through August, that quarter ending. And the pie chart shows the end of May all the way through the end of that quarter. And you can see that the asset allocation has changed very little between the three primary asset classes, cash, equities, and fixed income. Also at the bottom of the page where it shows the current market value, $27,224,000. To give you a little perspective, the last report that we gave, the value was $28,177,000. And as of Friday, that's $28,020,000. So we went through a quite volatile period, and we've recouped some of the decline in the portfolio value. Any questions on this page? If we may, I'd like to turn to page 19. The box in the top left-hand corner pretty much reiterates the percentages and the value of the portfolio that you saw on page 15. And if you move down to the bottom box, you can see our actual performance. For the quarter that we're reporting on, we're actually lagging our indices by about 1.1%. And for the year, we're about 1.6. And the last 12 months, 1.54. Due to the volatility of the portfolio and just its design. But if you also look at the portfolio value for the last rolling 12 months, it's up 9.75%. Although lagging, and we're still performing. A box that I really haven't emphasized in the past is the top right-hand corner. If you'd note that the portfolio value when we brought it, when we took over the portfolio, was $24,262,000. And it shows the net additions and withdrawals. That comprises all of the employee and employer contributions, net all withdrawals, which are the cost of the plan as well as the retirement distribution. You can see that the value of the portfolio as this report is $27 million. So about a net $3 million gain. One of the questions I always ask, how are we doing? Are we outperforming what our outlays are? And the answer to that is yes. Are there any questions for me? There's none, I'd like to talk.
Wait.
To, sir?
Jeff, I noticed on the holdings, the top 10 holdings, we're still heavy in refiners and the Exxon and the Chevron. I think oil today is up to $93 a barrel. How long, what is your process to determine something like those big, you know, they're huge investments and they're big companies. When do you determine whether you're going to sell and try something else? Just as an example, like how long will you hold Exxon?
If I may, I'd like to turn that question over to Mr. Harvey, since he's the portfolio manager. I could give you my own personal views on that, but he's better qualified, if I may.
You may discuss that one specifically right now, or wait till we get to that part.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, sure. To give you an idea of the way Bob Dahl manages this portfolio, at the beginning of the year, we felt like, I think his term was oil prices were going to remain stubbornly high. I don't think even he would have projected $93 oil. At the same time, we had an overweight in energy at that time, and we continue to have one. What we do is look at ongoing reports from companies as they continue to outperform analyst expectations, as their earnings themselves continue to look well and the valuations look well. We take all that into consideration. He's got a quantitative model that views that, and then he puts a fundamental outlay on that. He does not see a fundamental reason that oil prices are going to drop, you know, significantly in the next 30, 60 days. They were very well could be quite a bit lower 6 months from now, but it's kind of a day-to-day, you know, what does the value look like today based on current oil prices? I think what he would probably say is the companies probably have baked in a price in the $50 area. So, you know, we're well above that. If prices drop from 93 down to 60, that may still bring earnings above some expectations. So we don't try to forecast and say we're going to come out of energy completely right now because we think it's overvalued. First of all, we don't think it's overvalued, but at the same time, he doesn't look forward with everything in his model. He also takes in consideration historically how the oil prices are doing, how the companies themselves are doing. To give you an idea, we recently added a position in Encana, which is a natural gas producer, and of course that's shifting a little bit away from oil to energy or to natural gas, but still have a maximum overweight in energy right now, and I'm sure they look at that on a daily basis. So I can't tell you when we'll come out of the prices. I was going to address energy prices themselves in here, and one observation is that the futures contracts are trading lower than the current barrels are, which would indicate that the markets are saying they feel like oil prices are going to come down some. And I don't know, we don't really feel like the fundamentals justify $93 oil. There's speculation out there. There's still these tensions being put in there. But as long as that's out there, then it's giving the oil companies, you know, a lot of revenues with those higher prices. That answer your question good enough?
Yeah. I know, for instance, Morningstar rates it as a 3-star, which is at fair value now, but even they don't recommend selling it until it's like 110 or thereabouts.
Fair.
Exxon's about, what, 92, 93 right now?
Right.
Almost twice the barrel of oil.
But energy continues to be one of the themes as far as those companies that have global exposure that we're focusing on. We feel like the global growth is going to be the way to look, as opposed to companies that are strictly focused on domestic business.
I have a follow-up on the same subject.
Okay.
On the energy companies you have here, you've got basically, for example, Sun Oil Company now is basically just a refining
right.
company, and Valero, and okay. And the others, Chevron and Exxon, and Occidental is actually mostly a production company now. But my question to you is this, we were talking about, the strictly production companies are making their money off of just refining, while the other companies are getting some of their income or a lot of their income on their production, because when their price goes way up, well, they're making it off of there.
Right.
And I went to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and got their CPI. You know, you can go back and if you took a gallon of regular gas, which back in 1975 was 77. I was buying it at 75 cents up in the Dallas area. And if you use the CPI rate of increase, yeah, it comes to about $2.50-something. And I don't see how the refiners are making any money off of their off their money if they're buying it. What's your analysis of that? Between the integrated company and just the producer. And Sun Oil Company, I used to work for Sun Oil Company, and their stock is just, you know, they're really making a lot of money. Now, you can accuse these companies of gouging, if you want to use that word. But what's your take on that?
Well, I'll preface this by, you may have more expertise with your experience in the oil business than I do with some of these companies. I do know the refining margins had come down a fair amount over the last 3 to 6 months, but now they're starting to increase again. And again, as far as when they buy the oil and what price they buy it, and then their markups, they do get squeezed sometimes when they're having to buy oil at a higher price, which arguably some of the oil they've got on the books right now, they bought at much lower prices than this. They're just now starting to pass it on at the gas pump. But again, they've been able to do it through enough margin and then just strictly the volume. As people use more and more gas, then it's kind of the number of units as opposed to the spread on those units in a large degree. So I'm not sure if I answered your question
okay. Completely
right.
No,
there,
I can understand how the integrated company makes, because when their price of the barrel goes up, so they make it on that end. But the refining end is what I'm not quite understanding.
Where they're making the spread in there, and there are less and less refinery companies out there, which means that everybody's having to go to the same companies. You've had a lot more consolidation in that area. You haven't had refineries built domestically very much because nobody wants to have a refinery in their backyard. So with that in mind, the companies that are out there that do it well, do it efficiently, are getting the bulk of the business. So again, whether it's domestic growth or global growth, as you have more consumers out there buying more gallons of gasoline, then just the unit growth itself, they're going to have some kind of margin on there. As long as it's a profitable margin, then it's just a degree of, you know, how much they are making. Again, I guess 2 years ago, the refinery companies made huge profits in terms of they had a big spike up in the price that we were paying at the pump and the price they had locked in there. The margins have shrunk since then, but we're starting to see them widen again.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Question regarding Mr. Dole's predictions for 2007. Are there any major modifications that you all have seen over 3/4 of the year almost passed to the predictions he provided in 2007 for what we got today?
I'm embarrassed to say I don't have the top 10 predictions in front of me. Were there ones specific that you had in mind?
Well, I'll go back and compare those predictions for 2005 and 6 and
right.
2007. My question is, the predictions we're working on, pretty much those predictions for 2007. My question is, are there any major adjustments that you all have seen in his predictions?
I've not seen significant adjustments throughout this year. I mean, some of the themes that we've had, and I'm going to allow the charts right now, I'm just going to skip over the charts to, in a matter of time, and just address that we had looked for a slowing economy. We have seen that take place, I think. Part of his prediction had been that this would be a mid-cycle slowdown, as opposed to a slowdown so significant it would take us into a recession. So we continue to monitor that. The risk have been the slowdown in housing. That is as bad or worse than I think a lot of people expected. However, the pickup in exports has offset that in terms of the economy. So with a decline in the dollar, our export growth has really been booming. So when you take the slowdown in housing and then offset that with the export growth, corporate America is still doing all right. We had expected corporate profits to come in at a slower growth rate than they had been in the past. This is happening. I would say that they've not slowed as much as Bob had expected. So again, the direction of a slower economy, a little bit slower growth in profits, is pretty much right on. The profits have been surprisingly strong in the first 2 or 3 quarters. So we continue to feel like that could come down. You could have more disappointments. He feels like at the beginning of the year, I think he was looking for about 5% growth in corporate profits. We may end up at a higher rate than that, but going into the fourth quarter, we still feel like there could be some disappointments out there. Again, that was part of his projection anyway, though. In terms of, I'm going to get to your, I'm trying to cover some of the predictions. I'll get your question in just a minute. In terms of the equity markets, we felt like equities would have a decent year because we felt like they were the better asset class. And at the same time, we felt like large cap stocks would outperform small cap. Growth stocks would outperform value stocks. That has become the case. The first half of the year, that was not the case, but since the sell-off in the middle of the summer, coming out of that, if you look at the year-to-date numbers, large cap is outperforming small cap, and growth is outperforming value. So I cannot think of any of his other major projections that he's significantly changed at this point. Again, the degree of some of these things, the degree of the housing slump, maybe a little bit larger than he expected, but we still don't look for recession. I think our odds for recession are 1 in 3 right now. And we feel like we're going to, with the export growth, we're going to be able to avoid that, which would bode well for the stock market. Typically, stocks do well coming out of this mid-cycle slowdown. Interest rates, we had projected that long-term rates would go up and that short-term rates would be coming down. Right now, I guess the long-term rates are down more than we'd expected. 10-year Treasuries at 4.40 this morning. Short-term rates, we had expected the Fed to start lowering rates. They have indeed lowered 50 basis points at their last meeting. We expect another cut by the end of this year. Right now, there's 92% probability that the Fed is going to cut rates 25 basis points this week in the next couple of days, and could even cut it 50 basis points. So again, that part of his projections come right. Longer-term rates are lower than he had expected, I think, which could be a sign of continued slowdown in the economy, but typically is not bad for the stock or the bond markets. Yes, sir.
You actually touched on part of my question there with the recent actions of the Fed and the projected reduction in the future. What do you see for the housing market taking those into consideration?
We, I think, are still in the same camp as the majority, which is it's going to go through 2008 in terms of housing slowdown. Some people are going well beyond that. The big thing that we look at is how is that going to affect both the stock market and the bond market. We don't feel like it's going to pull us into recession. There are certainly a lot of companies being impacted significantly if they've got exposure to mortgages, holding them or selling them. So there are going to be certain industries, certain sectors that are going to feel it more than others. But again, we don't feel like it's going to be something that is going to take us down into a recession. I've covered most of my points just by talking, so I think that's rather than bore you with going through each slide one by one. I thought we'd go to the portfolio review itself and shed a little color on some of the comments Jeff made in terms of our performance year to date, as well as the portfolio structure. So if you'll turn to tab 2. And if you go to page 15, I think that's where he started. It's got the asset allocation with the two pie charts. And the asset allocation has not changed significantly over the last quarter. We're still about 61% in equities. Now keep in mind, this is a little bit backward looking. This is the end of August. We're now well into October. But we still have the same target allocation of around 60% equities and 35-37% in fixed income. I'll address the fixed income a little bit in that we've become a little bit more positive on that, in that we've started to see spreads widen out. What I mean by that is the Treasury, and this is part of the problem that the markets had had, they're trying to absorb right now anyway with all the subprime, is that the Treasury bonds typically trade, like right now, at 4.4%. Corporate bonds typically demand a higher yield for people to buy them. Those spreads had gotten very narrow, so there was not you were not paying much extra, but to take on a lot more risk. That's, again, part of the problems that are out there right now. But the sell-off that we've seen has caused those spreads to widen significantly. So for both mortgage-backed securities as well as some corporate bonds, we're able to get higher yields that will justify the risk that's baked in there. BlackRock has got a pretty strong expertise in risk management and how we evaluate that. We are starting to see some opportunities to step in there, whereas some people were, I guess, hurt on the other side by holding some of these higher risk bonds. And again, by higher risk, a double A bond or an A rated bond that's not a bond that's really at risk of default is higher risk than Treasury bond, but you weren't getting paid that much more to own it. Now, in throwing the baby out with the bathwater, those spreads have widened more, so it does pay to go out and buy some of those corporate bonds. So we're able to step in and start doing that. So we are starting to do that within the fixed income portion. So that 36% that's in fixed income, we're starting to make some internal changes there. Page 16, getting back to Sal, what you're talking about with the overweight in energy and some of the, if you look at the top 10 holdings, It's representative of where a couple of our overweights are, and that's in the energy area as well as the technology area. ExxonMobil, Chevron, the two top holdings, and IBM, Cisco, and Hewlett-Packard technology holdings. And I'll address how they fit in the whole picture in just a minute. But again, those are the top 10 holdings for your review. Now, the next page is the bar chart, page 17. It shows the percent of your portfolio, the equity portion in each sector relative to the S&P 500, the overall market. The overweights that we've had for some time and continue to have are in energy, materials, industrials, and technology. All of these tend to sell into the global market. We've seen global markets continue to do well while the U.S. market has started to slow. Whereas GDP has been expected to drop down growth in the economy in the U.S. To 2.5 to 3%. Globally, while we're slowing a little bit, we're still at 4.5 to 5%. So Asia is still booming. Europe still has good, strong growth. So the companies that sell into those markets are selling into a more vibrant economy. In addition, with a weaker dollar, our goods are more affordable. So that is giving us another boost to those companies that sell into that. So our overweight and our themes focus on those kind of companies. Now, we've actually been underweight financials, which is the area that's got hurt the worst. However, our discipline is such that we don't stray from the overall sector allocation by more than about 3%. So in doing that, while we're underweight financials, we still have had some exposure there, and that's pulled our performance back a little bit, as you'll see in the next page. But we did, over the last quarter, reduce our retailing stocks. Again, these stocks tend to sell domestically. The concern about the consumer spending less as interest rates have remained fairly high, and as oil prices have remained high, the expectation the consumer might not be able to carry us as much, we're pulling back on some of those retail stocks. The next page, page 18, shows the bond portfolio in your portfolio on the left-hand side versus the overall benchmark on the right-hand side. Our credit quality is a little bit higher, AA+. Our average maturity at 7.23 years is pretty much in line with the benchmark, and that has increased. At the beginning of the year, we felt like there was risk that rates could go up higher, so we had shorter bonds in the portfolio. We started lengthening some, and again, we've added some of the corporate bonds to benefit from the higher interest rates there.
Well, under the category for the treasuries, agencies, and whatever, the others, do we have CMOs or CDOs or SIVs?
No.
Or any of that in our portfolio?
No. We have Fannie Mae pass-throughs as well as Ginnie Mae's. These are all pools.
Derivatives.
No derivatives, no, no. These are all, when you see mortgage backs in our portfolio, they're all the conventional mortgages that Fannie Mae approves, which you've got the implicit guarantee of the government on those. So we have had no exposure to any of the CMO or CDOs.
And Merrill Lynch as a company has had a lot, right?
They have. It's been in the news a little bit. So. The next page, the performance that Jeff mentioned before, as he mentioned, if you look at the, I want to address the bottom box across there, and again, this is Murphy's Law. We hit kind of a low point in the reporting to you in August. Since then, we've had a significant rebound in the overall portfolio. But for the 3 months and year-to-date, our equities had lagged our benchmark, and I addressed a couple things. Our financials actually hurt us even though we were max underweight in that area. Some of the exposure we had, we did have some investment banking companies. They got hit pretty hard, and as well as some of the insurance companies with the concern about any holdings or to some of the CDOs that you're mentioning. We're pretty comfortable with the holdings we've got there. That doesn't mean we may not make changes. We've got still to have Lehman Brothers, Morgan Stanley. Our weighting is not that high in those companies, and we may very well decide to sell out of those. So I'm not going to make a compelling case to hold them, but that's the exposure we've had there. The other thing overall in this portfolio is we tend to have higher quality stocks. We do have a quantitative process we use as initial screen. When you had the sell-off back in the summer, and some of you may have seen news about this, that there were a lot of quantitative hedge funds and mutual funds out there that got hit with redemptions. When they have redemptions, if they've got holdings across the spectrum with higher quality stocks as well as some lower quality small cap stocks, the most liquid stocks in their portfolio are the high quality stocks. So they would be selling the ExxonMobils, the IBMs, the Hewlett Packards. That hurt our performance, even though we didn't have calls on your portfolio. These are individual stocks you own. So if somebody else decides to close their account that they've got with us, it has no effect on you. However, some of the funds that were out there, the bigger hedge funds, did get hit. So they really punished the higher quality stocks more severely. So while we've had correct sector calls, we've had some stock selection year to date that was not as good as it's been the last 2 years, the same process, so I have confidence that's just a 6 month phenomena. But we also saw the high quality stocks. Right now, if you look at the year to date performance through August, this period, that's the second row, it shows 2.9% for the portfolio. As of today, it's up 6.75%. So again, your portfolio year to date is up 6.75. The market's rebounded, your portfolio has rebounded along with that. And if you go across the row down there to the columns further to the right, you can see 2 year annualized numbers. Total portfolio is 10.4 versus a benchmark 8.75. 3 years, 11.62 versus 8.9. And then 5 years, pretty much in line with the benchmark at 9% versus 9.12. So again, the process itself we feel confident in. We've had a quarter or two of underperformance relative to the benchmark, but the process has not changed. We feel like these high-quality stocks are the place to be. And to reiterate our view at the beginning of the year and now continues to be that large-cap stocks, large-cap domestic stocks, will perform well relative to other stocks, and the growth stocks will outperform value. Any other questions?
Just to give us a flavor of the mechanics, are you personally in charge of our portfolio?
Not the stock selection or the portfolio construction. Bob Dahl, who you see on CNBC, actually is the portfolio manager on this portfolio. So what we do as regional portfolio managers is work with you to try to develop the right portfolio solution for your particular needs. On that point, the one thing to consider, and we've talked about this in the past, is that this is purely a large cap domestic portfolio on the equity side, and the thought of adding more diversification, I think, would be something that the board would want to consider. We've talked about adding international exposure, maybe adding some mid cap exposure as well. I think that I'd be happy to, Jeff and I could both sit down with the board and. I think he's talked about having that on an agenda item in some time in the future, but we do feel like, as a firm, and Bob Dahl feels like, international stocks will continue to do well, and that there should be international exposure in most portfolios, especially a portfolio this size. We have exposure to global growth through the multinational companies like the Exxons, the Hewlett Packards, but there are a lot of companies that are based outside of the U.S. that are well-known names that we don't have access to in this particular portfolio. So
you're restricted by our policy right now to domestic?
Well, your benchmark is the S&P 500. And when we're managing versus that benchmark, then we want to be true to that benchmark. And that tends to be our universe. We're charged with trying to outperform that. And we use S&P 500 stocks so that our risk does not get out of line with your benchmark. I think part of the consideration would be to think if that is the appropriate benchmark longer term, or if you should include some international exposure. We can develop a custom benchmark which would have X percent in the S&P 500 and X percent in the Morgan Stanley EAFE index, which is the international benchmark. So as long as the committee wants its benchmarked versus the S&P 500, I think this is the appropriate portfolio construction for that.
Questions?
Appreciate your time.
just as a follow-up to that, we anticipate coming back in January at the January meeting and having that discussion about, in fact, we're required to come and have a discussion about our asset allocation anyway with the committee, and I would anticipate we go into talking about whether we would want to either modify it or go into some different diversification type strategy, but so that'll be forthcoming.
Okay.